Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Produced by We Talk Production. And my name is Kenneth Jones. How are you this evening? We're here for another week. And a lot of things. Oh, happy Black History Month. I know many of you feel that every month should be Black History Month. Matter of fact, American history should be African American history. Yes, this is Black Urban America. Tuesday evenings from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Saturdays, we have Provocative Thought with Carter Steve from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Also, we have the marketing program for entrepreneurs. If you're interested, they're having your product or service exposure and your profits increase. Give a call to 404-482-4804. I wait for my guest to arrive in the studio. Tonight, we're going to discuss a very controversial topic. Have integration helped the black man? When I mean by black man, I didn't talk about specifically black man. I'm talking about the African-American race. Have integration made progress for us as a whole? Integration could be dated back to the Civil Rights Movement of 1964 or the Civil Rights Act of 1964, or has integration hurt black folks? And that's an argument that have been debated over the last 50 years. I know that Leslie Groff reports in The New African that when the Civil Rights Act was signed several years later, blacks, the black middle class, made a major exodus from the inner cities. But prior to integration, we had our restaurants, our movie theaters, our insurance companies, a whole array of businesses, black owned or African American owned. But arguments said that since the signing of the Civil Rights Act, all these businesses have failed because of the black middle class exodus to the suburbs. Isn't that something? In the late 60s, with the riots were happening, factory closed, manufactured closed. White folks took their businesses to suburbs or to the south or to, across the sea or what have you. They took a right. Don't you know that? What do I can say when factories and manufacturing companies were near cities where most 70-80% of the black population in this country lived at the time were working, had jobs, unskilled labor, until we were working. When they closed down the factories and whites moved to the suburbs in the late 60s, they took their businesses with them. Same with the black middle class exodus after the civil rights signing. They moved to the suburbs, and rightfully so. I mean, a lot of cities, even though black folks live good in the cities, have nice homes or what have you, they just wanted to go, especially by the 80s, especially the early 80s. That was a major exodus. You know what James Baldwin said about integration? He said, James Baldwin, for those who don't know who James Baldwin was, famous writer. Whew, great writer. Whew. He said, he describes integration as a burning house. He described integration as a burning house from his book, The Fire Next Time. Like I said, what did the Exodus also do? It took our brightest and best away from our cities. Our youth didn't have nobody to look up to except for the drug dealer and the hustler. So with the core of the consumer and the business owners gone, our communities start to suffer. You want to know who else to suffer? Our black colleges. Yeah. You know, at one time, that's all we could go to a Howard or Lincoln or Morehouse. A lot of black colleges suffer from integration. Dr. Boyce Watkins, professor at Syracuse, said, integration is just another form of assimilation. Why are we always trying to assimilate with another culture? Why we can't have our own thinking process? Well, I think Ms. Thompson is here. Good evening, Hello. Ms. Thompson. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I was just going through my introduction, what we're going to discuss this evening. And what do you think? Well, first of all, let's tell the audience who you are and what you do. Even though the audience already know who you are. Huh?
Say that again. I didn't hear you.
Tell the audiences and the listeners and the downloaders who you are and what you do.
Oh, hi. My name is Nene Thompson. I'm one of the admins for the Facebook group, the New Black Power Movement. I'm also, professionally, I'm a mental counselor, the faith planner. working with families and children.
In a tough city, too.
Yes, I'm in New York. So it's quite harsh. Conditions here are quite harsh.
Yes, I know. With the higher cost of living, I mean, a one-bedroom going for $1,900. With the gentrification, Brooklyn is not Brooklyn anymore. Harlem is gone. South Bronx is gone. And these culture centers. Isn't that funny? In the late 60s, all these folks moved out. I mean, they ran to the suburbs. They ran to Long Island. They ran to Westchester and everything. Now they come back and displacing us, our community that we built, like Bed-Stuy. Who would? If somebody told me 20 years ago that Bed-Stuy would no longer be black, I would tell them they were a liar. But they're not. So integration. What is your take on how are black folks doing since integration, the Civil Rights Act signing in 1964?
I think there's a difference, and you pointed it out earlier. There's a difference between integrating so that we are addressing injustice, right? And assimilation. And I think because black people were robbed of their identity, that and they were told that to conform to the values of this society makes them more acceptable and they'll be rewarded, jobs, validation from white people. They intertwine assimilation and integration, and it has been to our detriment. And I think I had this experience today. There's like a layer of assimilated black people that helps to reinforce racism against the less assimilated members in the group.
Can you explain that? Can you break that down for me?
Well, you have the respectable, good black person who has assimilated to white America, right? They dress like they do. They have their pastimes. They abide by all their rules and values and standards, right? And so when they interacting with white people, they don't challenge racism because they want to hold their position as an exceptional black person. And we were having a discussion today, and we were talking about police brutality in New York City.
Yeah, always been police brutality in New York City since I was a kid.
Yeah, I've witnessed it with my own two eyes. I've seen instances where unmarked vehicles will go up on the sidewalk, grab a young black male, pummel him. I've seen this with my own two eyes. And the response from the respectable Negro brothers in the room was to say, well, I can stop by the police. What I did was comply. As if that was the answer to the question of police brutality. And police brutality wasn't a function of systemic white racism and the criminal justice system. So then the
criminal justice, yeah, that criminal justice system is trying to create a new system called the caste system. But I can't say police brutality has improved. When I was coming up, they just shot us. They didn't stop us. They shot us. Now, at least they were asking for ID. That's an improvement, huh?
I don't see it as an improvement.
I'm being facetious. I'm being sarcastic.
Teenagers.
I'm being sarcastic. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't think assimilation has not been beneficial for Black Americans at all. It's undermined us.
Well, one would argue that it had worked for some with the affirmative action era.
That's not assimilation, though.
One thing about going to the white schools, that's what they try to do, to assist you to assimilate to their culture and lifestyle. Let me tell you what Donald Trump, chief of staff, said about the Muslims. Yeah, the Muslims could come here if they can assimilate. They just be, before they used to use code words, but now they just tell what they want everybody to do. They want everybody to dance to their drum beat.
Absolutely. But them on the top, they're setting the standards, and we're supposed to conform.
Yeah, and you know what, Nina? They have the guns and the power right now. The military, they have the criminal justice system, they have law enforcement that make sure our black behinds, our black and brown behinds do follow their rule. It's as simple as that.
But my issue is this. Why do black people enter these systems and they become a tool of white supremacy and white oppression? Like, there's not much difference between any black police officers and white police officers. And you can't say that it's progress because we've integrated in police force when we're perpetuating racism against other black people. Because we've assimilated to their culture and their values. That's insanity. It's a maladjustment. You mentioned integrating into a burning building.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Luther King said, I'm maladjusted. Meaning, I see the bullshit in the system and I'm not going for it. It's like we're integrating into a burning building.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah, well, one of his last speeches, Dr. King said, I hope I'm not leading my people into a burning house. And the burning house is America. The burning house is the American system. The burning house is the laws and the regulation that they implement on black and brown, or you know, people of color. You know, but there are some people of color that assimilate well. And I think so much stress happened, and that's why our community are such a disarray, because of this force, what you call assimilation, force assimilation. What do you think there?
Well, first of all, I don't lump all people who are not white into one group called people of color, because our experiences are different, our history is different, our ability to blend in and be accepted is different. And what I've noticed is when we join the people of color bandwagon, we're exploited as a black community and used for political advantage of other groups. And then once they've got their purposes served, they jockey for position higher up on the social hierarchy and push black people down again. So people of color, to me, is an undermining way of defining us as people of African descent. I don't go for that.
Interesting. So what can we do, Ms. Thompson? What can we do? How can we, as a people, because you know, we got black professors, we got black politicians, we have black corporate leaders, we have black doctors in the medical field, we have black nurses, what have you. How can we mess? You know, because I think they're gone. I think they're assimilated, they're gone, we ain't going to never get them back. But
right,
how,
there's some things that we have to write off.
The bill's called the 10%. Yeah, we got right off the 10%. I mean, affirmative action did well for some individuals, black individuals, but as a collective, not so good.
It's just that amongst the educated black people that they've assimilated and they're lost as far as empowerment to the black race. You'll find poor black people who are whitewashed and will undermine another black person, the jockey for position closer to, you know what I'm saying, acceptance for white.
Mm-hmm.
So those of us that are interested in actual empowerment, right, I think we need to find people of like mind. And build. We can build institutions. We can build a support system amongst ourselves, and it should be throughout the diaspora. They want us to feel like we're limited to the United States, so that they can oppress us, but we're not. Africa is
the
richest continent on the planet.
Where would the money come from? Where would the money come from to build these institutions?
I mean, like you stated earlier, we are people that many of us have money.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what is our spending power? Is it $1 trillion or something like that? Black enterprise.
1.2, sister. 1.2.
That's what I'm saying.
Trillion.
So we have to reevaluate our priorities.
So how can we do that? How can we reevaluate our priorities? How can we get a collective of black? I want to tell you something. Now, you're a mental health worker. You know what our mental health status is. We don't trust each other. We don't want to. We'll rather do business with another culture that hate our guts than to do business with ourselves. How can we get past that?
Some of us. I think social media is good and bad. The good part of social media is it's bringing together people of a like mindset. So you'll find a lot of these groups are promoting, supporting black business, supporting black colleges, building bridges with blacks throughout the diaspora, in the islands, in the continent of Africa.
But you know what, Ms. Thompson? I also follow Pan-Africanism. I also agree with it, but I'm also of this thinking. We got to help ourselves first before we can do anything across the waters.
But
we really
got
to get our house. We got to get our house in order. And that's why I mean, we got to get our house in order psychologically, emotionally, as well as financially. Like you said, we spent $1.2 trillion, but how much, you know how much of a dollar stays in the community? 1 cent. 1 cent. 99 cents out of a dollar leaves our community because we do business with others instead of ourselves.
I believe that. And I think part of helping ourselves is understanding that we were stripped of our identity. I was raised by a Barbier. So one of the things that he promoted was to have knowledge of self.
Right.
Racially, we're African. They're part of us. They are the richest continent on the planet. As you pointed out, we are always willing to do business with other races that despise us. There is unlimited potential in Africa and the islands. Every other race acknowledges this and goes there and engages those people to do business. Why don't we follow that mindset? It'll be reaffirming our identity and gaining knowledge of self as we're building bridges and structure and institutions and things that will benefit us and uplift us as a group of people. We are too assimilated and entrenched in this system in the United States. And as the administration is showing on us, you have to look at it this way. We are now surplus workers, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a country based on slavery, genocide, and warfare, right? You pointed out that areas that were black areas are currently being gentrified. So where are the black people going to go? If they want to make a purge effort, who would stop them? I mean, it sounds a little over the top for someone who's living like far away in a state where everybody's assimilated and getting along. But if you live in a city that is heavily policed, these things are not far-fetched. If they can go into Harlem and on the complex and march out 120 young men in handcuffs, what's to stop them? These are facts. So I think we need to be a lot less naive, more realistic, and actually take the plunge and start examining other black people around the world and what we can do to build with people of color.
So, are you saying that we have to start We have to start building financially, so we have our own finances ordered, so we could stretch, so we could address our own social ills, especially our education system. We don't even really want to start there, do we? Do we really want to get into that, the educational system? I mean, that's, to me, everything impacts on the black family, as you know. As you look at some of the, I forgot that term, where you put the family in the middle and all his support system. We are losing a lot of our support system. And as black folks, I think we need as a community to try to rebuild some of those support systems. What do you think about that, Ms. Thompson?
No, I absolutely agree. But I mean, we would have to be crazy to think that our enemies or our direct competition are going to teach our children anything to empower us to be even more competitive with their children.
But hold up, Ms. Thompson. When I walk through them schools, I see a whole lot of black teachers and black principals. You mean to tell me with all these black principals, black superintendents, black teachers, you mean to tell me they cannot develop a curriculum that will educate and enlighten the minds of our youth, where they could go into the home to help their parents and their siblings? You know, I mean, you mean to tell me they just can't develop curriculum that's competitive and culture?
You know, I mean, they could, but are they? At the end of the day, it's the parents' responsibility to educate their child, right?
But if they don't know, they don't know. Well, I used to do home visits, some just don't know who they are. They really don't. And sometimes, you know, you got to start from the fundamentals and the basis. I know we have all these ideologies, but these are the people that are really lost. Not lost, struggling. You know, I mean, and how can they think about starting a business where they can't even put food in the refrigerator?
A lot of the time, people who are considered poor here, in less developed countries, usually considered rich someplace else. So I know even amongst very poor here, you're hard pressed to find a young person that doesn't have some kind of electronic device where they have access to the internet and all of these other things. Like, the priorities, even among poor people, are completely lost.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I mean, libraries are free.
That's right. But do we access those libraries? Do we go to those libraries? You know, you could schedule workshops and meetings at the libraries for free. And my thing is, how many will attend? Well, all this social media, you think that the marketing will be out there quick, fast? How many of them attend? 2, 3, maybe 5?
It takes time.
Yes.
And as things become successful, more people start to participate. So, I mean, how often do people have these workshops to begin with?
The only time we go to the workshop if we force by some agency to go.
It should be a routine, like, there are certain things that should be a standard in my community.
Since we talk about workshops, it hit me. Yesterday, on my day off, I was watching this documentary on HBO, and it was about these test sites they used to have in the 40s and 50s, the missiles, the nuclear test sites. And a lot of these towns now are radioactive, and people are dying cancer in these little suburbs and everything. And in their meetings, standing room only. All white folks, standing room only. They go to their school board meetings. They go to their town hall meetings. They go to their council meetings. They go to meetings that concerns them. If it's medical, business, or whatever, they go. I mean, they stand in line outside.
Because they've been raised to feel empowered in their communities.
But us?
They have been raised to feel empowered in our communities. And I hear what you're saying, but I'm not going to say it's because we're careless. We have been raised with, even within our own communities, that other people are going to solve our problems.
The only time we go out for something, there are two things we go out for. Two things. One, if there's a police shooting. Two, if they're giving out sneakers. You know, all I'm saying is,
I don't agree with that.
I'm
in New York. I'm in Harlem all the time. And at cultural events, they're well attended. That's my reality. I can't speak. I'm not negating what you're saying. I'm just saying sometimes it's where you put yourself or you see what you want to see. Or you understand what I'm saying? I'm not trying to be disrespectful or anything, but we can have community events that are well attended. I've been to city council meetings filled with black people. Yes. But then,
is this the same regular folks every week, every month? Are we preaching to the choir? Are we getting the message out to the people that needs to hear it? You know what I'm talking about. But do other black folks know what we're trying to convey to them, how serious this dilemma is, how we're being bamboozled?
We have to meet people where they are at.
Do the average black person know this, huh?
We have to meet people where they're at. And for a lot of people who are assimilated or a little bit more polished or more educated, they think black are unintelligent or have a black person to the side. They don't want to associate with them because they may speak differently, dress differently, or act differently. And they want to distinguish themselves as a good black person, and they're not willing to engage. But they will contribute to the social death of other black people by saying, I'm a good black person, and that's an N-word. So if you know better, you can do better. So because we know, as intelligent, educated black people, that there are some of our brothers and sisters that need a little extra assistance, a little extra information, we should take it upon ourselves to meet them where they're at and engage them.
Yes, we do have to do a lot of engagement. And my thing is, I've been engaging black folks for 40 years, 35, 40 years, on the same method. It's just, you call it pro-black now, and Black Lives Matter. Back then, we would call them black nationalism. I've been out there since the black nationalism movement.
Black nationalism and Black Lives Matter, two different things.
Yeah, but they had the same concepts, you know, independence, financial independence, doing for self, having your own business, addressing these issues ourselves. All that is black. That was the birth of black nationalism. You know, black Lives Matter and the pro-black movement have this similar concept.
They're black. I am pro-black. I am a black nationalist. I am not an identity extremist. I am not a lunatic. And I do not. I support the underlying message of black people should not be summarily executed by the state. I do not co-sign Black Lives Matter. If you look at their agenda, it is anti-black family.
Really?
It marginalizes black men. They are backed by a corporate interest that is pushing an agenda that is anti-black male at the end of the day. It is anti-black family, anti-black reproduction.
So that's why they get so much hype. That's why they get so much hype from the traditional media.
Because they, at the end of the day, if you follow their agenda, you are undermining the black family, and we're not going to reproduce. The media, anybody that the media embraces and promotes, trust me, they are
not going to trust.
You can't trust them.
You
if you find a black leader that's still alive, you better you can't trust them. I'm sorry, it sounds over the top.
No, you're not over the top, Ms. Thompson. I used to think the same way back in the 90s, and I was heavily criticized for it. And lost some opportunities for expressing my views. And I feel that way. It has been always said that anyone that the traditional media try to shine a light on them, we got to really be careful.
Absolutely.
Anyone that the traditional media attacks, we better support that person, individual.
I would say we should take another look. That person might be on something. I would agree.
Yes, yes. And that person, like I said, if that person been standing tall for 40, 50 years, why? You've never been to prison. You've never been harassed. You've never been knocked in the head. You've never been threatened. You never received death threats and whatnot. And you still walking around and you chummy with the politicians and the police. I don't know. I cannot really support. I really have to take a hard look at that individual. That's just my interpretation of that's my perception of people that outlasted this whole movement that we're trying to create, which is to me economic independence. I mean, I feel and I know that y'all want to hit at the culture root. I agree with the culture route. I'm 150% that the culture route is the way to go, but we also need the economic route. We need the financial route. We need to enmesh both theories, which is both are at the streams of each ladder, but we need to enmesh that. And I think if we come from a perspective to average folks like me, that explain to what's going on historically, politically, or whatever approach you want to utilize. I think the average African American will be receptive. But right now, you know, people are looking at this gloom and doom, and it's not gloom and doom when you got when you spend $1.2 trillion a year. Now,
yeah, what are we spending it on? I think it's gloom and doom if we stay on this path. Because the value system, to me, is wrong. It's overly assimilated, and it's detrimental to us as a race of people.
Yeah. What we need to do, I mean, it's a lot of things we need to do, and everyone has their own approach on how to address our issues. The thing we have to start doing is stop criticizing each other. You know, sometimes we're our own worst enemy. We have to sit down at the table, leave our egos at the door, leave our religions at the door, and sit down at the table and come up with a plan that could address these issues. Because, you see, right now we're talking. Some people are doing, but we're talking. We're doing more talking than doing. And I think that we have to start because we only have a short period of time before we go back to the status quo. I know a lot of people yell at me when I say I'm glad Donald Trump is president. It will force us to do what we have to do in order to make the progress. We have to progress. Because if Hillary Clinton was Clinton, because let me tell you something about Hillary Clinton. Her husband locked up more brothers than any president in history.
That's fact. 2 million. He sat on his hands like a genocide in Rwanda.
Huh?
I'm saying yes. I mean, he allowed atrocities to unfold on the black community. So I could never understand. Or rather, it could be fueled more by the media. Like, how do you know any black people that love the Clintons personally?
Love who?
I'm saying, like, the hype, the media hype that the Clintons were so embraced by black people. How much of that is fact? How much of that is fiction?
I really don't know. I really don't really get into that, Ms. Thompson. But what I'm trying to say is that it's in the report. What report is that?
No, I said they didn't. They never deserved the support. So you were comparing Trump to Hillary Clinton. It's like. You're exactly right. Someone who pretends, and then someone who's in your face.
I'd rather deal with the guys in my face. Don't pretend to be my friend, and then when I walk away, you got my foot up to my rectum. It's not. And that's what's been going on for years. Years. You know? I think, Ms. Thompson, that we really, really, you know, to use the words of the military, we black folks got to start putting boots on the ground. And we black folks, what I mean by boots on the ground, we got to start doing these organizing, these workshops, getting into entrepreneurship, knowing thyself. It's one thing, you know, a lot of people criticize Elijah Muhammad, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The founder of the Nation of Islam. A lot of people criticize him. You know what this little man did with the bow tie?
Absolutely.
He wished 50% of his theory came from Marcus Garvey. 50%.
Absolutely.
And he implemented a lot of Garvey theories and approaches, like starting your own business, believing in your own God, starting your own temple, your own religion. Let me tell you something. He took the worst of the worst from prisons. Straight and clean them up, gave them a bath, shine them up, put that bow tie on. Let me tell you, it was a proud thing to see them walking down the street selling the Muhammad Speaks. Well, I was a. And let me tell you something, and it's a shame where the Nation of Islam had ended up today. But all that I have to say about that is that we have to go back to that. You know, he was on, and guess what? Oh, boy, the IRS was after him. The New York Times was after him about his lifestyle and everything. You know, even Malcolm turned on, and Malcolm's like, a god, not god, but I'm just saying like a hero. But I'm just saying that we got to take steps like that.
There are people that are doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, and they need to be marketed. We got to use some of those terms that they taught us in school. Let's market it, you know? Well, Mr. Thompson, it's been a pleasure again. Very inspirational. Anything you'd like to say, last comments?
No, just thank you for having me. I appreciate you.
Oh, you know what, Ms. Thompson? I think this should be a regular thing, you and I, debating these different topics. What do you say about that, Ms. Thompson?
I'm open to it as my study will permit.
I know. Being a mental health worker, hold up, sister. I know about being a mental health worker in New York City. I know about it. I know. Hey, thank you for coming on, Ms. Thompson, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you. All right.
All right. I will be talking to you.
Okay.
All right. Well, I agree with a lot of stuff that she says. Like 99% of the stuff that she said, I agree with it. But the thing that I want to say is that we have to really, really decide how we're going to approach the issue. Because this issue that we're speaking about is really going to come to a head. And I hope as a people, we will address it in an appropriate manner. Well, as always, I am because we are. We are because I am. I'll see you next week.
Hold it now!